That is the way things are.
This is the Ministry of Truth, and man, if you think you knew anything about American history, hang on to your seats. Did you know who invented the Nazi salute, folks? I wouldn't have believed it until I heard this guy and seen his evidence, and have seen his evidence. Folks, we got Rex Curry on the line. He's an attorney from Tampa, Florida, who I guess you've made it kind of your avocation to hunt down and collect this, I don't know if it's suppressed history, but all of these photographs and information about where the Nazi salute came from. It was right here in the good old USA. Welcome aboard, Rex Curry.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on and for your introduction. Yeah, it's funny. You just made me think. I guess you could think of it as modern-day Nazi hunters, Nazi smashers here. And then where it leads us is quite amazing. Back to the old USA.
I was just floored by that the first time I heard it. And cognitive dissonance started to kick in. And then I said, wait, I need to go look at his stuff before I make my mind up. And yeah, it was all there. The American students in the 1800s given the Nazi salute to the flag during the Pledge of Allegiance. Holy mackerel.
Probably explains a lot about the growing police state in the USA.
Nowadays, yes.
Legacies of German National Socialism that are still with us today.
So, give us the background. Who was the guy? Well, it's tied in inexorably with the Pledge of Allegiance, it seems. Who was the guy who wrote it?
Francis Bellamy. He was a cousin and cohort to another famous person, Edward Bellamy, an author, and Francis wrote it in 1892, and it was part of a larger program in the most famous magazine probably at that time, a youth magazine, which is, that's almost scary itself, called the Youth's Companion,
nice.
And it was part of a larger program for him to promote his military socialist dogma, and that's his phrase, not mine. Believe it or not, Edward Bellamy and Francis Bellamy actually would approvingly call their dogma that they were promoting military socialism. They thought the military was just a keen, efficient method, and they wondered why all of society couldn't benefit from the military system, have everybody, everywhere, food, clothing, shelter, goods and services, all of society, all of the economy, ape the military, use the military system.
And we're talking about the late 1800s?
Yeah, 1892 is when he came up with the pledge. Edward Bellamy had already, they'd already been promoting the military socialist dogma from 1888 when Edward Bellamy wrote the international bestseller, Looking Backward, a book that is one of the rare examples of a book that's almost immediately spawned political and social change through the book. It was translated into every major language, including German, Russian, and Chinese. It created nationalist clubs. It's called the Bible of National Socialism. And from 1888, when that book starts the movement in the United States, then to 1892, Francis Bellamy creates the Pledge of Allegiance and promotes it through civic groups and through government schools. The program, the idea was that they wanted the government to take over all schools. That was part of the plan. It was part of complete widespread socialism that they wanted to achieve, and that's why they wanted a flag in every school, at every school, to let you know this is who your leader is. This is who's in control now. It's the federal government. And this is who you're going to robotically chant to every morning with their salute, which was the origin of the Nazi salute. A lot of people don't know that Nazis didn't call themselves Nazis. Nazi is a shorthand term for the National Socialist German Workers' Party. They called themselves National Socialists, which, interestingly enough, is what the Bellamy's were, National Socialists in the USA, 3 decades before it was picked up by the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And they wanted it originally started with a military salute because that was part of their dogma. They loved the military socialism, and then the military salute was extended outward towards the flag. And in practice, the kids would just shove the military salute straight out towards the flag, and that was the origin of the notorious stiff-arm salute, 3 decades before it ended up in Europe.
Now, you write also there was a thing where they would actually turn their palm upward in worship also?
Exactly. The original description by Francis Bellamy in the Jus Companion was the military salute was supposed to be extended out towards the flag, and the palm was then supposed to be turned upward. But as you can see from the photographs, which are on my website, rexcurry.net, that's R-E-X-C-U-R-R-Y, all together, .net, the kids didn't do it that way. The kids were similar to the kids today. They basically couldn't care less. They were being forced to do ritual robotic chanting every day in government schools, socialized schools, and so they would do the first part would be, I pledge allegiance with a military salute, starting with a military salute, and then the rest of the pledge, after you said, I pledge allegiance, you'd extend the arm outward towards the flag. They would just shove it out there, and that would be the classic Nazi salute. And what was also interesting was, I think some of the people, even back then, thought it was kind of creepy, the idea of kids doing military salutes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we were talking about 7-year-olds, for crying out loud, and everybody else. They're not in the military. Some people even think it's disrespectful to, you know, pretend, act like you're in the military and do military salutes. Aside from that, they thought it was bizarre or creepy. So I think some people just started dropping the military salute, which left them with the stiff arm salute part, the second part of the gesture, which would be repeated with the arm out towards the flag. And yeah, take a look at the pictures, and if anybody out there in Radio Land has more, send them in, because I'm the only person who collects them and posts them so that everybody can see early pictures of the Pledge of Allegiance. You're never going to see them in government schools. They're certainly not going to show the kids what the history of the Pledge of Allegiance is. You will never see them in newspapers, even with all this litigation from California about the Pledge of Allegiance. All they do is drone on and on about two words, and they are never going to show you the rest of the story, as they say. They're not going to print any of these pictures in the papers. They're not going to show them to you on TV. And so hopefully we can change that. That's why I enjoy talking to you and people like you about this, so that I'm going to make sure that as many people as I can hear about the history of the Pledge of Allegiance.
How'd you first stumble onto this, Rex? This is a suppressed history.
I remember a long time ago seeing a photograph of kids doing the stiff arm salute to the flag, and my response is the same as most people when they first see it, just shock and confusion. I did not know what it was.
Doesn't
what was going
fit the
on.
Paradigm.
Pardon?
Doesn't fit your paradigm, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, but then I the picture, I think, had a short explanation, which was absolutely astounding, exactly what I'm telling you. Nobody ever keyed it in. That's what I'm famous for. I've got basically two famous historical discoveries. One is I was the one who figured out that it was actually the origin of the Nazi salute. I mean, people would, you could occasionally find a photo and you'd look at it and say, well, people used to do the pledge that way. that never would say, hey, it was the origin of the salute. They did it for 3 decades before it was picked up in 1920 by the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And then I also am credited with the discovery that although the swastika was an ancient symbol, it was being used by German National Socialists as overlapping S-shaped letters for their socialism. That was their little trademark, not unlike what they were doing with other organizations, including you can still see similar alphabetical symbolism on Volkswagens.
Yeah.
You know, the same stylized combination of letters.
And they were really big on the double S's.
Oh, yeah, and the SS division, and they had many different, they were also kind of mimicking what they call runes, ancient German, for various organizations that they had. And as a matter of fact, the Volkswagen symbol used to be the swastika itself inside of a coggle before it was changed to a VW. So, and so the pledge salute was made by Francis Bellamy, and he promoted it to encourage the government to take over all schools. He was very down on private enterprise, capitalism, individual liberty, homeschooling, church schools, any kind of private enterprise. Not unlike the way people are today when you talk about schools.
Yeah, you make a good point on your website several times that what the heck are we even doing with public schools?
Exactly. Especially as you see what they use them for today, just everything. They're basically taking over kids, not unlike the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, taking children from their parents, teaching them to worship the government every morning, and robotic chanting, and which I also, part of what I do when I talk to folks like you is to encourage people to stop doing it. It's crazy. Yeah. Our government is a police state. It's growing.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Socialists are outspending the previous government by more than double and growing. We're like near $9 trillion in debt, taxes, spending, laws. They just keep piling on more and more of them, searches, you name it. And what we need to be working on is pledging disallegiance to the police state, disallegiance to draconian taxes, all these socialistic programs, the socialist slave number, social security numbers that they use to track and tax everybody all their life, their income, their jobs, employment, residences, movements, even to the point now they can track you by what you buy, where you go, what you do, how you travel.
Yeah, I'm sure one of the main arguments in favor of keeping the Pledge of Allegiance around, as we talked about Michael Medved beforehand, but he was trying to make this argument, well, it's harmless now, why don't we just keep it around as kind of a tradition thing? But doggone, how in the heck were people patriotic before 1892? I mean, that's when we had our real heroes in this country, isn't it? Before all this crap?
Exactly. Bingo. Yeah, Michael Medved is a sad example of what has become of the Republican Party. I call it the Republican Socialist Party, indistinguishable from the Democrat Socialists, and all they do is constantly expand the size and scope of government. And apparently Michael Medved and other crazy so-called conservative show hosts,
yeah.
I don't know what they're conserving. I guess they're conserving massive spending and socialism. Because not only do they like robotic chanting by kids, which, by the way, these are also done by laws. Some states, including the state I'm sitting in right now, Florida, our crazy legislators passed laws mandating that this ritual will occur every morning for every child's life, 12 years of his life. And it's not just the pledge, and it's not just its history. It is, in fact, that the Bellamys did it to promote socialism. They were very successful at it. They did it to have the government take over all schools. As you can see, they have darn near succeeded, which I would also add, this is a good time for us to always encourage listeners to try to get your kids out of your government school.
Yeah.
If there's any way you can do it, get them out.
I think there's, as you point out, there's a reason why there's no provision for public school in the Constitution, and I like how you had rewritten the First Amendment. You added something that I think should have been added. Congress shall make no law respecting religion or school, you wrote on your website.
Exactly. There's no reason for them to be involved with churches. Government takeover of churches would be wrong. It would be as disastrous as it is and has been for the government becoming involved in schools. When the government took over schools, they imposed racism by law. They taught segregation as official policy, which, again, I can tie this in for you. Not only do we end up with this stiff-arm salute picked up by German National Socialists, but our government takes over schools. They impose segregation by law. They teach racism. 20 years later, we got National Socialists in Germany doing the same thing, slaughtering people by the millions. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics does the same thing. Oh, by the way, I continue to do more research all the time, and this flag fetishism seems to have originated with the Bellamy's in the USA, and it didn't just go into Germany, but you can see the same thing happening with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and even Mao in China. This robotic chanting, the flag fetishism, and marching and worship of government, all we did it 3 decades before the other crazy socialists in the world started mimicking us. Terrifying stuff. The more I learn, the scarier it gets.
And so were the Nazis in contact with the Bellamy's? Were they just impressed with them?
Well, that's an interesting question. There is a tie-in through the Theosophical Society.
Oh.
For example, the USA was using the swastika as alphabetic symbolism for socialism even before Edward Bellamy's book. In 1875, a gal named Blavatsky starts the Theosophical Society with a retired colonel, military colonel, in New York City. And by the way, Francis and Edward were both from the state of New York, too. And
from Rome. Perfect.
Yeah. Francis was actually from Rome, which may be part of the myth, the
Rome, New York.
That it's a Roman salute, when really it's a tie-in to the fact that he was from Rome, New York. And so, and from 1875, Blavatsky's using this swastika symbol as part of her symbol for the Theosophical Society, and all they do is they spout the same silliness that you get from the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the National Socialist German Workers' Party of, brotherhood, comrades. They even had cockamamie ideas about Aryan races and the root races, and it's just wild stuff. You got to try to read it sometime, which is probably why people have forgotten it or deliberately tried to forget it.
So were the Bellamy's theosophists?
Yes. Yeah, happens is after Edward writes his book Looking Backward in 1888 and it becomes this international bestseller, the Blavatsky creates a partnership with Edward Bellamy and starts talking up his book, and the Theosophical Society members were often also the Nationalist Club members, the party that was the Edward Bellamy's group, the political side of it. And so you get this tie-in with the swastika that's real interesting, and I'm continuing to do more research on that. And that was also even more than 3 decades before the German National Socialists pick up the alphabetical symbolism of the swastika for socialism. As far as how the salute gets there, different ways. There was travel, obviously, between Germany and America all the time, leading up to and through the National Socialist German Workers' Party. There was a German-American Bund Society, which was a group that openly supported and assisted the German National Socialists in Germany, because back then people were very confused. I was like, well, who are you going to pick? Stalin with the USSR, who's slaughtering millions, or you want to go with Hitler, German National Socialism? It was very sad, very, very sad time. Mm. And so you had German Americans who were pro-German National Socialism, and then you had the other people who were in favor of Stalin. And the Germans were also getting influenced by, of course, films, newsreels, radio, and also Ernst Hofstadter, which is hard to spell. It's something like H-A-N-S-T-A-E-N-G. There's N-G-L. Hofstadter, not too difficult to find out. Look up something like Hitler's piano player. He was a Harvard grad. He himself wrote a book about how he went from Harvard, after he was out of Harvard, went to Germany, became close friends with Adolf Hitler, and in his own book describes how he helps Hitler out with his chants, his marches, and wowing the crowds with their pomposity, and including the Sieg Heil chant, which he describes, Ernst Hofstadter describes, as being based on Harvard football fight songs, which Ernst would actually write. He was an accomplished pianist. That's why they call him Hitler's piano player. So, and you know, at that time, when Ernst was at Harvard, well, what was the salute? The salute was the stiff arm salute to the U.S. flag. So that's an even more personal tie-in with the German National Socialists from this Harvard grad, Ernst Hofstadter, who became a personal friend and advisor to Adolf Hitler.
So the term Roman salute, a lot of people will attribute, like you said, the salute to Rome, and maybe it was because of the Rome-New York Bellamy connection, but also, did they get it from old movies? Where did they get it? Romans really didn't salute each other like this.
No, they did not. It's an amazing myth, absolutely amazing how strong it is, how often it's repeated still today. Even though if you look at some recent movies, such as Gladiator by Ridley Scott, they don't do it anymore. I think they're starting to figure out that that's a big myth, so they're dropping that. But if you look at the old ones, like the original, way back, Ben-Hur, black and white, silent, probably not the one you're thinking of. You know, most people think of, Charlton Heston or something.
Oh, yeah, there was black and white one.
There's an older one, man. There's a really old one that has the salute. And what they did is they started, for some reason, just using this salute in fictional Roman scenes in the new movies. This was when movies were real big, real new, and they were even famous in Germany and Europe. You know, like Ben-Hur would go over there. Hitler was famous for watching the U.S. American movies, the new black and white silent films, and anything he could get his hands on. So they used it quite a few times. There's a piece that popped up in the American Philological Association about the lack of any examples of the salute in ancient Rome, and pointing out that there were examples of the salute in fictional Roman scenes in early black and white movies, silent movies. And so there's the tie-in, and what was interesting was the person who wrote that piece for the American Philological Society, when he wrote it, he did not know that the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, its early salute was the stiff arm salute. And he did not know that that pledge predated all of those movies by decades or more, because it started in 1892, and it predates all of those movies that they referred to in the American Philological Association. I was the one who wrote in and said, hey, you didn't know when you wrote this that the stiff arm salute was the early salute to the Pledge of Allegiance. So that was one of the connections I made that led to the discovery that, in fact, it was the origin of the salute of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the Pledge of Allegiance.
Getting back to the public school thing, the father of public schools from the 1800s, Horace Mann, I read a bio of him one time. Do you happen to know if he had an opinion on the Bellamys?
I don't know. I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah.
I know that Francis Bellamy was involved with the National Educational Association, and he used it to promote the pledge. He was also a Freemason. He used that group to promote the pledge. And that's somewhat ironic, too, because to this day, it's my understanding that Freemason groups still start at some point their meetings with the pledge, and they probably have no idea that it started in 1892 with Francis, who was a Freemason and a wacko socialist promoting military socialism. He's the one that gave it to their group, and that it used to be a stiff arm salute.
Yeah,
it was
sure
the origin of the Nazi salute.
The Blue Lodgers don't know, at least, yeah.
Which I guess could be another connection to Germany, too, because, you know, Freemasons were an international group.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure there were German Freemasons in America that went back to Germany and vice versa, travel back and forth. So he was with the National Education Association. And another thing that's interesting, on my website, I have an example of the nationalist publication, which was Edward Bellamy's publication promoting his national socialism, and it you can see on the bottom of the publication, it was published by a group which they either created or were involved in called the Nationalist Educational Association, which I think that is just fascinating, because I think that shows deliberate mimicking of Francis Bellamy's involvement with the National Educational Association. There's no telling what was really going on at this point. I'm not sure what I could even find out, but it makes you wonder just how close the association was.
Well, and every time you deal with that word nationalism, maybe you're familiar with this, maybe not, but George Orwell had written an essay breaking down the differences between nationalism and patriotism.
Yeah, Eric Blair, 1984 or whatever.
No, yeah.
Yeah, George Orwell, yeah, that's right.
Patriotism, according to Orwell, and I think he was right, is by nature defensive. Nationalism is by nature offensive.
Well, I'd like to also say that real patriots, they don't pledge allegiance.
Yes,
they declare their independence. And everybody out there needs to declare their independence.
Rugged American individualism, whatever happened to that?
Exactly. This is what it's all about, individual liberty, personal responsibility. It's not about Social Security numbers.
Mm.
We need to pledge disallegiance to that. It's not about government schools taking your children from you, forcing you to pay to go there so that you can't get out unless you pay double to go to a private school. That's not what it's about. We need to pledge disallegiance to that. These crazy taxes, $9 trillion in debt, massive taxation spending, we need to pledge disallegiance to all that.
Yeah, I don't know if you're able to speak to the heinousness of Social Security numbers any more than that, but just the nature.
Yeah, I call them socialist slave numbers.
Socialist slave numbers, yeah, yeah.
And still to this day, people act like all it is a retirement plan, when you and I know that it's the police state.
Mm-hmm.
They track you your whole life. They give it to babies, for crying out loud.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
and the government schools demand them to get into the schools, and they have the they can track you, your travels, your purchases, where you work, how much money you make. You cannot get a job anywhere. You can't get away from them now. You are trapped. You can't do anything without the number unless you go completely underground, which, you know, fortunately, a lot of people do that. My hat's off to them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but these Bellamy guys, didn't they pose as Christians or think they were Christians somehow?
Yeah, they called themselves Christian Socialists, which is another interesting tie-in to German National Socialism. Because, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the Germans didn't call their symbol a swastika. You know, they called it a Hakenkreuz. Phonetically, you might say Hakenkreuz, which is basically
H-A-K-E-N-K-R-E-U-Z.
Pardon?
A hooked cross?
Exactly. To them, it was a type of cross. So you got this other interesting tie into the dogma of the Bellamys, who called themselves Christian Socialists, and they tried to sell their military socialism, amazingly, also wrapped up in the Christian Socialism movement. And they came from a long line of, religious people. So in that sense, it was still, I guess, in keeping with their history, their family history. And it's also interesting that the Germans, as they called it, a Hakenkreuz, which translates as hooked cross, normally it would be flat on one side as if it was drawn in a square. So another thing that you can see that Hitler does with the symbol is he turns it 45 degrees to the horizontal, so that as if it's drawn in a diamond, it's standing on one point, and eventually he orients them all to point what I would call clockwise or in the S shape. He's highlighting the S shape. And he knew this, because there are examples of his own artwork, early artwork, in which he uses the symbol not only flat on its side, but he also uses it in both directions. Well, eventually, they're all pointing in the right direction, the S-shape direction, and eventually he's got it turned 45 degrees. So you can see how he evolves his symbol to become not, you could say in a sense it's no longer the Hakenkreuz, it's no longer a cross, it's now an alphabetic symbol for socialism, the way he's using it. Also, as I said before, he didn't call it a swastika, so that blows the whole myth of him just having a, what they would call a good luck symbol from the Sanskrit term from India. They didn't even call it a swastika. It's not even clear whether he even knew the word swastika. Because if you read what he writes, the original German, usually what you read in the West, it's, of course, translated. It's all English, and they just constantly substitute swastika for Hakenkreuz. When you read the original, it suddenly dawns on you, he never calls it a freaking swastika. It's always a Hakenkreuz. And it's not clear that he even knows what the term swastika is as a good luck symbol, which it was back then. I mean, way back in the USA and all over, it was just a popular good luck symbol, not unlike a four-leaf clover. It was used all over the place. But then, as I said, in 1875, Madame Helena Blavatsky creates the Theosophical Society to promote socialism. She uses the symbol way ahead of Adolf Hitler. She teams up with Edward Bellamy after he writes his international bestseller in 1888.
And the Nazis had a huge theosophical interest, too.
There's a tie-in to the Thule Society, too, if you really want to get into it. Which, interestingly enough, at least in the English transliteration, has similar initials, TS, although in German it was different. And so, yeah, you get the Thule Society. A lot of these crazy theosophical people were involved with the German National Socialism movement. So it's all fascinating stuff, how millions of people end up getting slaughtered by these crazies who take over at least, well, more than three different enormous countries. You know, the Stalin, Mao, and Hitler are the top three killers of all time.
And you've coined the term Holocaust, right?
Yeah, I call it the Socialist Holocaust, of which the Holocaust was a part, because a lot of people don't realize that Stalin and Mao both managed to outslaughter Hitler. Hard to believe, but they managed to do it, and the main reason they managed to do it is because they weren't killed at the end of World War II. They were still alive. Stalin and Mao both lived decades longer than Hitler, so they had a lot more time to slaughter a lot more people. Nobody knows exactly how many, because the socialists weren't keeping track. Some people put Stalin as high as like 60 million, Mao anywhere up to, well, he could be 50 million, I'll say. They both more than double what Hitler did. He's usually at the high end. He's at 20 million, 21 million. And, it's scary how stuff like this happens. And we're still doing it. Not only did we not change the salute until 1942, when Congress decided to inject their idiot selves into the mess, we were already in World War II when they decide to write a little blurb, or they want to say, from now on, it's going to be the hand over the heart. Well, of course, everybody didn't immediately bend over and drop their pants for Congress back then in 1942. Some people continued to do the stiff arm. You know, all the schools all over the country didn't think that they had to jump every time Congress said jump. And not only that, but this another sad thing is, even after the war was over in 45, the government's still running the schools. They're still segregated. They're still imposing racism and teaching it as official policy. Some places are still doing the stiff arm salute. It's hard to believe, and people don't really appreciate what it was like back then, due to the Bellamy's and the Pledge of Allegiance and government takeover of schools.
You make a good point that I never thought of. All the civil rights strife that we saw in the 60s, and because of the separate but equal policies, that was that was all caused by the public schools, the government schools.
Exactly. Yeah. And
wow.
The amazing. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just, if private individuals were running the schools, you would have some racist schools, but then you'd have some perfectly healthy schools where people are getting along if it was just left to individuals and left to states. But if it's uniform and government,
Yes, exactly. It was like the comparison I made with churches. Imagine if these Christian socialists had decided at the same time that not only did they want the government to take over all the schools, which they, as you can see, had great success with, but they also decided at the same time, hey, we should have the government take over all the churches.
Yeah.
And they could even use the same reasoning. They could say, how are poor people going to go to church if we don't have the government run all the churches? And what are they going to do? Same thing. You get the government takes over all the churches, and they impose segregation by law. They teach racism by it. And today, if they had done that and we had the government running all the churches, and you said to them, hey, the government shouldn't run all the churches, they'd probably look at you as crazy as they do when you say the government shouldn't run the freaking schools. Same difference.
Well, so the common thread of all these dictators who were mass murderers, Mao and Hitler and Stalin, Mussolini et al., was socialism. And here we got this guy in the early 20th century. John Dewey was pretty much a hired hand by the Rockefeller and Carnegie and other foundations a hired hand to socialize our schools. And you make the point that he was a big fan of these Bellamy guys.
Yeah, real big fan. And not only that, of course, you probably know that he actually traveled over to the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
Do we did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Wow.
One of those crazies did. He was out there, you know, taking notes, learning how the pros do it, I guess, or they were like collaborating, trying to figure out how to impose the utopian socialist wonder schools on everybody. And it's amazing he didn't go over to Germany and help them out. You know, Edward Bellamy had actually lived in Germany a short while, about a year, and he knew how to speak Germany. When he had his book published, he had it almost immediately, deliberately translated into German.
There's another connection. Yeah.
Yeah, he advertised it, his German versions of his book. He would sell it packaged with Marx's Capital as a package deal. You could buy his book.
Oh, Das Kapital?
Yeah, Das Kapital, Karl Marx. And Dewey, yeah, was a big fan of Bellamy's and
Marx, too, of course.
Yeah, and the socialist schools. And I'd like to look at Dewey more to see whether he made comments about the Pledge of Allegiance. That's sort of my forte at this time.
Yeah.
And the swastika symbolism, which I think is fascinating, how people have tried to suppress that. That's why they like to use the term Nazi. It's an effort to avoid telling you what they actually called themselves, the National Socialist German Workers' Party,
yeah.
And to try to rehabilitate the dogma of socialism and National Socialism.
So, these guys, these Bellamy guys, they were so popular in their time that there were Bellamy clubs around the country?
Yes. They would either call them Bellamy clubs or they would call them nationalist clubs. And the name of Edward Bellamy's publication in which he promoted his dogma was The Nationalist. That's the name of his magazine. There's our examples of that on my website, rexcurry.net. And he acted like he didn't want to be pompous, so he wasn't too keen on Bellamy clubs because he thought that was conceited, and he, I think, suggested that instead they call it nationalist clubs. He also tried to avoid using the term socialist a lot because he at that time he knew that it had a lot of negative connotations to a lot of people, and in that sense he was absolutely correct, and it seems to have been a very successful move on his part because his dogma grew like weeds all over the world, including the USA, and the Bellamy's were, as you can see, very successful, especially with the government takeover of schools. But he also supported things like, I'm sure, the Social Security system. If you read his book, which is still available, not only is his book still available,
this is Looking Backward.
Looking Backward, it has been published, reprinted so many times, it's amazing. They were still reprinting it in the 30s while the German National Socialists were growing. His influence was that great. They were even coming up with new books, compilations of his articles and remarks, such as Talks on Nationalism. I believe that was in 1937. Another publication in 1938. So his people who liked him and his dogma were still promoting his dogma long after he was dead. The guy was already dead in, I think, the early 1900s. I could pull up the date. It slips my mind, the actual date. People were still promoting his dogma, publishing his book, publishing new books posthumously about his dogma and his writings all through the build-up. And you know what's really interesting is Francis Bellamy lived just long enough to where he, I think it was 1931 or 33, I'd have to double check. He was just there where he could have known, he could have seen what was happening in Germany with his salute. And he, it's interesting to wonder what he thought, because I've tried to find out whether he made any remarks about realizing what was happening, that with the National Socialist German Workers' Party aping his stiff-arm salute that came from his Pledge of Allegiance, what he thought about that. Because a lot of people, when it first started, they didn't know what to make of it. Some people thought it was a good thing. Even socialists thought it was a good thing.
You know what strikes me as being weird? The notoriety of these guys. How were they so famous in their time to do all this? Who was backing them?
Yeah, well, a lot of Edward Bellamy's success did come from the Theosophical Society teaming up with him and promoting his book through their society, and their members joined his group.
And who knows what secret society tributaries you might get from there.
Right, and then, as I said, Francis Bellamy and James Upman, who assisted him with the pledge on the Youth Companion, they were both in the Freemason group, and he promoted his pledge through that group, other civic groups, fraternal groups, and
now
of course through the National Educational Association.
Okay.
Yeah, and boy, it just gets more and more terrifying when you the more you read about it. I'm having such a good time, in a sense, learning about it. It's just mind-boggling information. You had the Stalin, Mao, and Hitler. Lenin's wife reviewed Edward Bellamy's book, so we know that occurred, that it was talked up over there. Many people have commented on the influence of the Bellamy book internationally with nationalist clubs all over the world, including Germany and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
What, Rex, was the Gobitis case, if I'm saying that correctly?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not positive myself. Gobitis, Gobitas. That was the case in the Jehovah's Witnesses kids. They were some of the first ones to resist doing the straight arm salute and the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. They considered it the worship of government. And this is another interesting tie-in to the National Socialist German Workers' Party, because it was happening at the same time period. They were being persecuted, the Jehovah's Witnesses, in Germany, as well as obviously lots of other people, including Jewish folks, who were being persecuted, and because they didn't want to do the stiff-arm salute to the swastika flag, the new flag of Germany under German National Socialism. And so obviously that was real dangerous. And at the same time, people don't realize this, it was happening here in the United States. Our government was persecuting kids for refusing to do the stiff arm salute to the flag and chant robotically every morning. And some of the first people to systematically resist were Jehovah's Witnesses, just like in Germany. And they took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. In the first case, they lost in the United States Supreme Court. I think that was in 1930.
They lost to Nebuchadnezzar and the golden image, huh?
Yeah, and the U.S. Supreme Court basically said, yeah, we can make you do it, and if you don't do it, we're going to punish you. We're going to expel you from school,
wow.
And then who knows what happens after that. I can tell you what happens after that. It actually happened. There were cases in which children were taken away from their parents on grounds of unfit parenting because they wouldn't make the kid do the chanting every day with the stiff arm salute. So it's amazing the parallels, the ominous parallels between what was happening in this country under FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the worst president probably this country ever had, how close he came, which, by the way, that's also when he came up with the socialist slave numbers, 1935, the height of the power of national socialism in Germany. He was stepping onto the same path. Stalin, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, all that stuff. He's doing the same stuff. The kids are being forced to do the stiff arm salute. They're being persecuted. They're being taken from their parents for unfit parenting. There were lynchings. There were violence. There were even by the government officials. And if you did try to take your kids out of government schools, you reject the socialist school system. You either try to do homeschooling or church schools. You know what happens, especially back then. They came and persecuted you there. They would try to shut you down and trump up excuses and charges for yanking your kids away from you and stick them back into the government school so that they could do stiff arm salutes every day and chant the flag in worship of socialism. Amazing. People don't want to think about it. They don't remember or think about how many things we were doing that were exactly the same as what was happening under German National Socialism and under the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Which, by the way, this would probably be a good time to remind people of something else that people seem to forget. In 1939, the National Socialist German Workers' Party joined as allies with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics in a pact to divide up Europe, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, in which they both simultaneously invaded Poland, splitting it up, and went on from there to start splitting up everything else. And as you know, one of them actually ended up succeeding to a great extent. That was Stalin and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Hitler.
Thanks to our backing, yes.
Right. And he ended up dead, so that ended his part of the deal. And so it's just terrifying to think about.
Okay, another good point you make, man, is when they walk into a courtroom and they swear allegiance to the flag, that violates the Sixth Amendment, does it not?
Well, yeah, that's a good argument to make, because what happened was after 9/11, when our crazy government got even crazier, there was at least one judge somewhere who decided that he needed to start his courtroom with the pledge, which he had never done before, including basically making the jurors or leading the jurors and pledging allegiance to the flag. Apparently, as I understand it, he didn't make them use the early salute. I just say that in jest, but you can imagine it would have been probably even more appropriate. So the defendant, in this case, it was a federal court. So you realize, especially when you're in a federal court, the opposing side, the prosecution, is the U.S. government, which supposedly is what the flag's supposed to represent. So the defendant didn't think that was such a keen idea when he's supposed to be convicted of a criminal charge, to have the judge have the jurors swear, allegiance to the U.S. government. So he actually took it up on appeal. And
you're having the jurors swear allegiance to the entity that is prosecuting.
Exactly. So now I think the way that it came down was, I don't think the judge does that anymore, and I think other judges who might have had the idea decided it wasn't a good idea either. But the U.S. Supreme Court didn't address the matter. They didn't want to take it. That's rare that they'll take any case, and especially one that's unusual like this. It didn't become a big trend, or they might have done something about it. It was the only example I know of. So they didn't chime in on it. But it was a fascinating case that he did object and he did appeal it. And the appellate court didn't give him a new trial because of it, but I think generally it was decided that probably among the legal profession that was not a good idea. So I've never seen it done. I've never seen any judges having jurors do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. Now,
that's what I do. I do criminal defense work. I'm a lawyer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I knew that. When, if you said this already, forgive me, but when exactly did the United States drop the raised arm salute again?
Well, different places did different things.
Congress passed something.
Congress acted in 1942 after we were already in World War II. So that's one of the funny, weird things.
So was it an embarrassment thing is what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, it probably was, but the weird thing is there's not a whole lot there in the congressional record that I've found. So it just seems like somehow they did it. They did it real fast. They didn't say a whole lot about it.
Aha, uh-huh. There's the tip-off.
And it's very funny that way. However, you know, as I said, all the schools didn't immediately follow suit.
Yeah.
I've talked to people who were doing a stiff arm salute in the 1960s, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And what's also interesting is there were a lot of people who didn't want to change it, which, you know, you can almost sympathize with them because even though you got this lunatic, the German National Socialist Workers Party over there, and he's really turning it into a really unpleasant this thing, the stiff arm salute, there were people, lots of people in the U.S. who were basically saying, hey, that's our salute. We did it first. Why should we drop it just because some wacko in Germany is turning it into a piece of trash, right? And there were people who were like that, and they which, yeah, makes sense, but the way things go and the way things happen, it became so identified with the National Socialist German Workers Party that eventually people just couldn't take it anymore. They stopped doing it. Which is also weird because if you watch History Channel movies...
The Hitler Channel?
Yeah, right. The one, yeah, that exactly. They'll show you German-American Bond Society groups before we were at war. And, you know, like I said, before we were at war, it wasn't really illegal or necessarily wrong to support Hitler because he was just this whack job over in Germany, one of many that you could choose from,
mm-hmm.
right? So they'll show you these German-American Bund meetings, and at the German-American Bund meetings, they would do the stiff arm salute. Well, in these History Channel shows that I would see, they would never say to you, hey, that's how we were doing the Pledge of Allegiance. They would never, for all we know, when they showed you the German-American Bund meetings where German Americans in America were doing the stiff arm salute to the flag, you couldn't tell whether they were doing it as part of the Pledge of Allegiance or as something else. So I thought that was the height of intellectual dishonesty.
It's suppressed.
And it still is. And it's possible they didn't know when they made the film.
Or it's possible it's suppressed history that they don't want out.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
and
wow.
People still do that. There are examples, including on my website, of Charles Lindbergh doing the early salute, and he became involved with a group known as the American First Committee, and people today will imply to you that he was doing Nazi salute when really what he's doing is they're showing you a picture of him doing the Pledge of Allegiance. You could do that. Because today people don't know. So if you can find even Roosevelt, there are examples of not only Roosevelt doing it, there's one of Hugh Johnson, one of his bureaucrats, underlings in his government who used to do it an awful lot. Hugh was doing it so much it was starting to bother people. So they're, but yeah, you can find pictures of celebrities, and I'd like to do that some more. I've got some leads I'm working on. I'd like to find more and more. It'd be fascinating what you could find. I'm sure a lot of people have been burning pictures, you know, especially if it's of them past. They're probably thinking, oh, let's get rid of this.
Well,
what's weird, too, is I mentioned how Bellamy lived to, like, 1931.
Mm-hmm.
When he wrote the pledge, he asked people to send in pictures in the Youth Companion. Of them doing this big new ceremony, the Pledge of Allegiance, for posterity. And you can just imagine, he probably had a trunk full of those things, right, from all over the USA.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, if he still had that trunk in 1931, you can imagine those pictures are starting to look a little funky.
Yes.
At that point, and who knows what happened to his box full of pictures. They probably got burned or something.
Wouldn't have been very PC by that time. Man.
Yeah, boy, history is funky, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is weird.
And it's just often, I think, suppressed stuff that we're not supposed to know about. And while we're on that subject, well, we're out of time, Rex, but tell us your website again, and also invite people to get some more stuff to you, because thanks to the internet, you never know where somebody is going to send you something. A lot of this could go to who knows how many people.
Sure, the website's rexcurry.net, Rex Curry all together, R-E-X-C-U-R-R-Y at that's .net. And if you wanted to send something, send it to Curry, C-U-R-R-Y, at IJ.net, N-E-T.
Do you get stuff very often? How often do you get stuff?
All the time. It's a blast.
Wow.
I get different things. I get shock, disbelief. I get socialists who hate me for pointing out what the actual name of the German group was. I get leads. People tell me they've seen this loot in old films and things, which are that's a little time consuming to follow up sometimes, but sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it doesn't pan out at all.
How often do you get a picture, a photograph that you'd never seen before of this?
Well, now, rare.
Yeah.
I think I've seen them all, but I haven't seen a new one in a while. But, you know, I could, if I had the time, I bet you I could find a lot more. I just got other things to do, but
someday maybe I'll
get retired, and I'll just start looking at all the old films. I bet if you look at a lot of the old newsreels, it wouldn't be difficult to find a lot of interesting stuff.
Wow. Suppressed history, folks. Okay, Rex, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Okay, let's hopefully we'll do it again sometime, maybe.
Yes, sir.
Okay. A cog at the wheel that flattens the roads to the future. Seasons change. Cast aside amongst the empty cans of beer. Scattered the ashes.
That is the way things are.